Namaste and welcome to The Leadership Show. I'm Rose Singh. Today's episode is a personal one, a journey which initially started out as an interest and has since developed into part of my daily life, both personally and professionally. The stresses in our lives are endless. Is there a way to control them and reduce their effect on our health and well-being? I believe that organisations should be moving away from not only looking after their employees' safety and financial security, but also towards their mental health. Over the last 25 years, I've studied and pondered many Hindu philosophies, which I believe contain answers to many of life's questions. Recently, I was given the honour of spending some time with His Holiness, Bhaktacharya Swami. Bhaktacharya is a spiritual master having dedicated over 40 years of his life to selfless duties within the ISKCON organization. During our time together, we explore Hindu beliefs and understandings and how their applications can greatly help reduce one's stresses and anxieties in our modern world. Let's explore these truths together and discover some answers to happiness.
Everybody needs to work. Now, the first consideration is that one should be engaged in activities that he naturally likes to do. Like one naturally has certain propensities. Like say somebody likes to write poetry. Somebody likes to make money. Somebody likes to fight. Now unfortunately what is happening in today's world, the whole focus is onto money and making money. Irrespective of whether you like it or not.
Okay.
When I was young,
yes.
Everybody was going for engineering. Then a trend came, no, engineering is not good enough. Now, medical profession is more paying. So everybody wanted to become doctors,
yeah.
Wanted to pursue the information technology.
Yes.
See, why? Because the consideration is which occupation will bring me maximum amount of money. And one's own consideration has been totally disregarded.
Right.
Say a person who would like to write poetry, you know, he's ending up becoming a factory worker. He's not getting a scope for that, you know, he is being driven to do things like what ultimately will bring him the maximum amount of money. And as a result of that, you know, in today's world, practically everyone is dissatisfied. Those who are working, everyone is thinking, when it'll be Friday and I'll get the weekend.
That's right? True. That's
they're
true.
Simply trying to run away from what they're doing.
So why do they continue? Why do they...
Because the social structure has been designed in such a way. If you can't earn money, then you won't be able to pay your bills. So, you know, everyone is forced to, like recently I was in Singapore and you know it's beautiful structure, you know,
oh,
everything
yes.
is so beautifully done, but I was told in Singapore practically everyone has to work from 10 to 12 hours just to maintain.
Correct.
In one hand they made such a nice,
yes.
you know, comfortable arrangement, but in order to fit into that arrangement, in order to stay in that arrangement, you have to completely dedicate all your time and effort.
I see most of us live to pay bills, collect wealth, and accumulate possessions, the results of which don't deliver meaningful satisfaction and causes stress and anxiety. I spoke with His Holiness about issues around work, wealth, doing what you like to do in order to live a fulfilled life without stress and anxiety. There are certain times in our lives when we feel absolutely, when we do things, we feel brilliant about ourselves. Okay. And we like to talk about those traits that we display, you know, they're the transcendental traits that we carry. What are the traits that one should aspire to or one should make their own? And which are the ones that should be aware of? We'll talk about that in a moment and how to overcome that.
To achieve that, you know, I'll say first we have to get rid of six negative influences.
Okay.
Those negative influences are lust,
mm-hmm.
greed, anger, illusion, pride, and envy. So these are the enemies that are kind of attacking our hearts. Like say for example, when you get angry, I mean, how do you feel afterwards?
Exhausted, actually.
Yeah, yes. Really miserable.
Yes.
And, you know, when we are envious of others, you know, our heart becomes, you know, heart shrinks. You know? So we have to overcome these and cultivate the positive qualities, the qualities that broadens our heart. Generosity, service to others. You know, through lust, we try to exploit others. Through love, we try to serve others. So we have to conquer lust with love. We have to conquer greed with compassion, generosity. We have to conquer anger by affection for others and, you know, feeling for others. And in this way, you know, we can, you know, ultimate consideration is actually love.
You talked about false ego. Can we talk a little bit more about that, please?
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah. The false ego, you see, false means wrong. And ego means the identity. My mistaken identity. I am a spirit soul. But I am thinking that this body is me. And that perception or that attitude, you know, is the false ego. A soul is eternal, full of knowledge and full of joy. But what we are doing is we are trying to get these spiritual needs or spiritual requirements fulfilled through this material body, which never happens.
So would you say it's fair to say we're chasing the wrong knowledge?
Well, I will say we are chasing a mirage in order to quench our thirst.
Okay.
And that's what is happening with us in this material nature. No matter whatever you're aspiring for, our heart is never content. Our heart never becomes satisfied.
Okay.
But, you know, at that point, say a traveler in the middle of a desert lost his way and running after a mirage. Then somebody comes and tells him that, look, this is a mirage. Running after this, you'll never be able to quench your thirst. But there's oasis. Come with me, I'll take you there. And that is what is needed in this world. Everybody needs a guide who can actually show him the way to the real source of joy, real source of happiness.
Through our lives, most of us think we know how to act when it comes to doing the right thing. But what is the right thing to do? And how do we overcome our own ego and self-interest to do it? I talk with His Holiness on what he thinks of doing the right thing by acting selflessly means.
I was brought up in an environment in India when we used to think that West is the best.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. And then I went to the West. And there I began to see that this is also the same place. So I started to read. I began to recognize the glory of India when I went out of India. And then that brought me to a point, you know, when I began to realize that the goal of life is not to just pursue some materialistic objectives.
Okay.
And I went back to India in search of a spiritual master, in search of a guru, because I knew to tread in this path, I need a guide, I need a spiritual master. And initially, I tell you, it was quite disappointing. Because, you know, a kind of a feeling that they themselves do not know what they are pursuing.
Okay.
Right? So how can they lead me when they themselves do not know? But then I came across a book by Srila Prabhupada.
Yes.
Called The Nectar of Devotion. And when I started to read it, you know, practically from the very first page, everything became...
It made sense to you.
Yeah, okay. It made sense to me. Like, you know, I was aspiring for liberation those days.
Yes.
The goal of life was to become liberated.
Liberation, what does it actually mean to you?
Liberation means, I mean, at that time my awareness was to become free from the suffering condition.
Too many people feel their identity and happiness is tied to their job, to their wealth, and to their material possessions. His Holiness emphasized the need to search for the right guides, someone with experience to help achieve inner contentment, and how critical it is to find the right guide. Even His Holiness started out on a similar path, feeling the influence of the West as the way it must be. But he soon learned something that challenged that in the rediscovery of the richness of India.
When, as I said, like when I started to read the book, you know, the first thing that came to me was I was aspiring for liberation. Another way you can describe that, you know, liberation, say consider, the question of liberation comes when there is a question of imprisonment. A person who is free, he doesn't have to worry about liberation or freedom. A person who is bound, person who is imprisoned, he only needs, you know, this consideration of, you know, becoming free. Now, somebody is in a prison. He can get out of the prison in two ways. He can dig a tunnel and escape from the prison. Although he'll be out of the prison, but he won't actually be free. The police will be after him. He'll have to hide all the time. And his life will be even more miserable than being in the prison. Like at least in the prison, he was getting food and place to sleep. Now, you know, he doesn't even have that. Yeah. You know? Now, the other way to get out of the prison is you appeal to the king that, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I promise I'll never commit that crime again. And then the prison, then the king sends the message, okay, he has rectified, so release him. So that is the positive liberation, you know, surrendering. Mm. So here comes again the question of surrender. Accepting the authority of the king. Mm-hmm. Now, accepting the authority of the King of Kings, the Supreme Personality of God.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, like, surrender, you know, like, I surrender unto you. All I want is to please you. And you decide what you want to do with me.
Okay, so having a good deal of trust.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Surrender and liberation may be similar things. For me, it was simply about being willing to accept that not everything is in my control and learning to let go. It has helped me achieve contentment and enabled me to focus on meaningful work. His Holiness shares some insights into his 40-year journey to liberation through service to others.
Can we talk a little bit more about, in terms of surrendering, what does it actually take, or what did it take for you? I mean, I, for instance, okay, in the mornings when I meditate, I go through a particular series of pranayamas and asanas, and then I get to a stage where I do my surrendering or my puja, and you know, I actually have a certain phrase that I say where, you know, I surrender. How do you go about it, or how did you find that process?
When you are a little boy, did you have any anxiety?
None.
Why?
I think I had faith. I was in touch. I just saw everything being beautiful. Hmm. That also had a bit. But yes, I knew I'd been looked after.
Yeah, this awareness that someone is there who is taking care of you, who knows what is best for you and who is providing you with that. When we are children, we can depend upon our parents. But when you grow up, we can't depend upon them. Then we have to fend for ourselves. Not only we have to fend for ourselves, we have to fend for also those who are around us. And that causes so much anxiety, so much distress.
Unnecessary worries.
But if we could recognize that there is somebody who is taking care of me and who knows what's best for me, so let's depend upon him.
It was an enriching few days for me to be able to spend time with someone living the life I've revered for so long and learning from each other's experiences and studies in happiness. If you'd like to see more of our conversation, please watch part two. And in part three, watch our roundtable discussion on how to apply practical tools to achieve happiness in your daily life.